Welcome to the BenGreenfieldFitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and today we're going to talk about something pretty controversial. And before I jump into exactly what that is, I want to let you know that I have a video for you that delves a little bit more deeply into the story that you're about to hear. And it's the story of Sadie, and Sadie is an 11-month-old baby who suffered from 300 seizures every day. And she was given something specific and something relatively controversial to control these seizures. And I'm going to put a video of what happened next in the show notes because it blew my mind. And I'm going to put the show notes up for this podcast episode where you can view that video over at BenGreenfieldFitness.com/weed. And my podcast guest today, Dr. James Schmachenberger, and I'm really going to hope I'm pronouncing that last name correctly, is the executive producer of a new documentary called The Science of Weed. And this documentary is meant to put the truth and the real facts in the hands of people who need marijuana-based medicine so that they can make informed decisions about utilizing cannabis not as a recreational drug per se, but as an effective treatment for health issues. So we're going to be talking all about this today with James and also about this new documentary that just came out. So James, first of all, thanks for coming on the call. And second, can you tell us a little bit more about the story of this baby, Sadie, and what exactly happened?
Absolutely. And yeah, thank you for having me. And I'm excited to be able to share a little bit about Sadie because this has been an incredibly heartwarming and touching story to both just be witness to, but also in my case, get to be kind of close to and see the experience this family's gone through. Sadie was born with a rare genetic disorder that had it caused a number of complications, but the primary issue was that it made it to where she was having between 200 and 300 seizures every day from the time that she was born. And the family had gone through traditional allopathic medicine to try to come up with a way to manage this. And she had been on, I believe it was 7 different anti-seizure medicines, had been on heavy steroids, and they really just couldn't control the number of seizures that she was having. And in addition to not being able to control it, they were causing a whole series of other issues where her liver was on the verge of shutting down from toxicity from all the different drugs. And when she was 9 months old, the doctors had said that she likely would only live for another 2 months. And between the liver damage and the severe neurological issues that were being created from the seizures. And so that's around the time that I ended up getting connected to the family. And, you know, they were at that stage willing to try pretty much anything because what they were doing clearly just wasn't working, and without an attempt at something different.
Yeah.
Her daughter was going to pass away shortly. And so they ended up putting her on an extract of CBD, which stands for cannabidiol. It's it's another chemical that is in cannabis. Most people are familiar just with THC, but CBD is the second most prominent chemical. And it has many of the same medicinal effects that THC does, but
who put her on that? Was it her parents, or was it the actual medical establishment?
It was her parents.
Okay.
So, you know, the medical establishment isn't quite that far along yet to where they'll typically do this on their own. And some of her doctors were a little weary about it, although that has since shifted dramatically.
And where did her parents get this?
Her parents had gotten this. There's a the company that makes the particular version that she's on is a company called Hemp Meds. Mm-hmm. And it's a particularly interesting and neat product because unlike most other types of extracts, this particular one is derived from industrial hemp as opposed to traditional marijuana. Mm-hmm. And they're doing an extract that's very high in CBD and has almost no THC in it, which means, you know, two things. One is that the product is classified as an industrial hemp product, therefore it's legal to purchase almost anywhere, all 50 states and most countries across the world. And so that's a pretty amazing distinction that doesn't exist in most situations. The other thing is that since there is no or close to no THC, which is the psychoactive property, they're able to produce the medical benefits without the high.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, particularly when you're talking about a less than 1-year-old person, that can be really important because you don't necessarily want to produce a high unnecessarily in someone whose nervous system is developing.
So there's a way that this is actually metabolized in a way that's not producing a lot of like the same endocannabinoids that would cause a high?
Right. Well, so within cannabis, there's about 70 different cannabinoids that have been identified. Each one has different medical applications. Some have psychoactive properties and some don't. And THC is the primary one that people know of, which has incredible medical applications, and yet it also has a very extensive psychoactive effect, which creates the high. CBD, on the other hand, has no psychoactive effect and has most of the same medicinal properties. Mm-hmm. So in the case of many people, but particularly young children, being able to get CBD-rich extracts where you can control whatever the medical condition is without causing the high is really, you know, quite important and profound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. So what happened with Sadie?
So in her case, she actually, as part of the medical issues that she has, her throat had had to be clamped off. And so they feed her and they give her medicines through a tube in her belly. And so in this case, they took the product, which is called Real Scientific Hemp Oil, and they had to dilute it down a little bit so it could go through the tube. And they put it into her belly. And within 15 minutes, she stopped seizing. And, you know, at 200 to 300 seizures a day, that means that she's almost in constant seizure. The parents hadn't actually seen her eyes open, but just a few times in her entire life because they were rolled back in her head during seizures. Mm-hmm. And so within just a few minutes, she stopped seizing. And over the next about 2 weeks, as they were working in at to figure what the right dosage was for her, she had two more seizures. But since then, she hasn't had any seizures, and she just had her 1 month or her 1 year birthday a little under a month ago. Mm-hmm. So she's going on 4 months now with zero seizures.
Wow. Wow.
So we went from, you know, 200 to 300 a day down to none. And, you know, she was supposed to have passed away likely 2 months ago. And now, you know, not only did that not happen, but all of her test results are coming back, you know, the best that they've ever been. She's starting to be able to recognize her surroundings, which is something that was expected that she would never have. So now when her parents speak or she hears a sound, she'll be able to recognize where that sound is coming from and turn towards it. And her, you know, her nervous system is starting to build and regenerate in a way that was just never anticipated. Mm. And so her family is just incredibly grateful. Her doctors are sort of floored and don't quite know what happened because there is nothing within traditional Western medicine right now that produces that kind of effect when it comes to such severe forms of epilepsy.
Right. Interesting. So how'd you get involved with all this? Like, how'd you find out about her story and then get involved with producing an actual documentary about weed?
Well, my background is in alternative medicine. So I used to own a vocational college in San Diego where we taught all different forms of alternative medicine, from nutrition to alternative psychology to body work. And it was during that time that I started to get introduced to sort of the medicinal aspects of cannabis, which isn't something that I was familiar with. You know, I more so had my own judgments around it. And then I started to get presented over and over again with people that I knew and respected that were beginning to use it for different ailments and seeing the benefits. And so about
what kind of stuff were people using this for?
Well, you know, I was seeing a whole myriad of things at that point, and I've, you know, since seen vastly more from things that are relatively simple in nature, like treating insomnia, anxiety disorders. But then, you know, I started to see people utilizing it for severe and chronic pain. There was a patient I got introduced to, I think just under 5 years ago now, who had been in a severe car accident and shattered his spine. He had multiple vertebrae that were fused together and, you know, was just in severe pain on a constant basis. And the doctors had put him on both Oxy and Percocets. Mm-hmm. And as a result of being on those, they did absolutely manage the pain, but he, you know, he expressed that he felt like he was in a constant daze and he couldn't function. He could, you know, much of the time he couldn't even drive and live a normal life because how high of a dosage he had to be on. And, you know, and this was a man that had children and said that he was just devastated by it because the pain was too extensive for him to not take those drugs. But then when he was on the drugs, he didn't feel like he could connect to or relate to his family. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up starting to switch over to cannabis. And over the course of about a month and a half,
Did he switch over to the same thing that they were giving to Sadie? This what'd you call it? Cannabidiol?
Yeah, that's what Sadie's on. This is, in this man's instance, that's not what he was on. He was actually using both smoked cannabis as well as edible forms.
So he would have been getting like a high effect from that rather than just like the oil.
Absolutely.
Okay, interesting. Go ahead.
But in his circumstance, you know, though there was some high, it wasn't so significant that it impacted his ability to relate. And actually, the high itself helped to support him with some of the depression that had been created from the lack of mobility that had been developed. Mm-hmm. And so over the course of just over a month, he ended up weaning himself off of both the Oxy and the Percocet to where he wasn't doing any of that. And he was just doing a combination of smoked and edible cannabis. And, you know, in his life was just completely changed as a result, because now he was able to be present with his family. He could relate with them. He could feel again. He didn't have that numbing sensation that came from the drugs that he had previously been on. And then he also didn't have the negative side effects. Right? Mm-hmm. Most of those heavy drugs have significant effects to the liver and will oftentimes dramatically reduce someone's life expectancy as a result of that. And with cannabis, that's not true. So he was able to get the pain relieving effects without the detrimental effects to his liver, as well as the detrimental effects to his psychology.
Now, I've seen some talk about how the use of marijuana can do things like suppress the immune system, you know, if you use it long term, or cause things like, you know, reduce testosterone and stuff like that. Like, are there trade-offs here when you use marijuana for everything from like pain control to enhancing sleep to some of the other things that you've mentioned?
You know, with anything that you take, there's potential side effects and downsides. However, the vast majority of the things that have been suspected as potential downsides have since been disproven. Right? So there were some beliefs back in the 70s and 80s that regular cannabis use would suppress the immune system. And so NIDA, the National Institute on Drug Abuse, which is the federal agency that oversees research on this topic, had started a number of studies to try to prove that cannabis would suppress the immune system. And in the process of running those studies, it ended up getting found that it was exactly the opposite, that not only did cannabis use not suppress the immune system, but there were indicators that in many cases it would actually increase immune function. You know, there's still a tremendous amount of propaganda and kind of misinformation that it impacts the way in which research is done. And so every once in a while, there are studies that come out that indicate certain negatives. But then when you look at those studies and the way that they were done, most of the time they were done with a very clear bias going in and weren't properly done studies. And then whenever a full-fledged study is done, it ends up finding different results. The testosterone issue, as I understand it, is one that is at this stage somewhat questionable. There was one study that was done that indicated the potential for minor reductions in testosterone production with heavy use of cannabis. Mm-hmm. And then there have been a couple of follow-up studies done that have indicated that that isn't the case. But there haven't been any full-blown clinical trials on either side to fully determine that, as far as I'm aware of.
Now, you know, like I personally do not use weed. Like, I live in Washington. It's legal. Mm-hmm. I can get edibles here. I can get pot pretty easily, but I don't use it because I compete in events that are sanctioned by the World Anti-Doping Association, and right. It's banned. Why do you think it is that WADA would ban marijuana for athletes?
Well, I think that predominantly is just a kind of political and legal issue more than anything, because it's been pretty clearly indicated that marijuana is not a performance-enhancing drug. And
To me, it's almost like a performance de-enhancing drug. I've used it sparingly in the past and always had really crappy workouts the next day.
Yeah, and you know, and some people are affected differently as far as that goes. I mean, I have known athletes that feel like it does give them a sense of energy to be able to go in and work out harder. But as a whole, that's not the case. That's more of a kind of a rare individual experience. And I don't remember the name of the organization offhand, but the organization that oversees drug use with the Olympics had made an official determination that it was not a performance-enhancing drug, and yet it still remains a banned substance within most areas of competitive athletics, and that really has to do just with the fact that it's not legal at a federal or international level.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. Gotcha. Now, you know, let's return back a little bit to the use of weed for medical conditions. You mm-hmm. mentioned one that I know I get asked about a lot, and that's insomnia or difficulty yes. sleeping. How could somebody use something like marijuana for that?
Well, there's a number of different ways that they can utilize it. For insomnia, one of the best methods tends to be to take it in an edible form. And the reason is that when you inhale it, the onset is almost immediate. It happens usually within a matter of seconds to a few minutes, but it only lasts typically for about an hour and a half to 2 hours. And if you have trouble sleeping throughout the entire duration of the night, that might mean that it'll support you in getting to sleep, but it won't necessarily support you in staying asleep. So on the flip side of that, when you ingest it, it takes significantly longer to have the effect start, usually anywhere between half an hour and just slightly over an hour, but then it lasts typically for about 8 hours. So if people ingest cannabis shortly before they're ready to go to bed, then as it onsets, it'll support in them falling asleep, but it'll also support in them staying asleep.
Have you ever seen any testing that people do with like these new sleep apps or sleep tracking tools to see if it affects quality of sleep or if it somehow affects like the extent to which you can get into a deep sleep phase? The reason I ask is, for example, if you look at something like a Valium or a diazepam based medication, you fall asleep, but it's basically like a chemical brick. Like you just go into this non-neuronal repairing sleep phase that really doesn't ever get you into like deep rapid eye movement sleep. Do you know if that's the case with weed or if it's a kind of a different mechanism?
No, it's definitely a different mechanism. Anecdotally, there are a handful of people that I've known that have insomnia and other sleeping disorders that have utilized it and tracked it with things like the Zeos device or some of the tracking wristbands that will show what their sleeping patterns are. And typically it'll increase their deep sleep time by at least double. And some of those tracking devices are more and less accurate, but some of the more accurate ones that I've seen, you'll see significant increases in REM sleep as well as deep sleep. Mm-hmm. And that's, which is really interesting, but that is a little bit more anecdotal. There are, however, several more significant, like federally funded clinical trials that have also been done that show that pretty definitively, that it both helps to fall asleep, but it's bringing people into deep sleep much more so.
Gotcha. Okay, cool.
Insomnia is actually one of the things that cannabis is approved for in the majority of areas, right? You've got about 22 states right now that have laws allowing for the medical use of cannabis, and insomnia is one of the conditions that it's approved for in most of those areas because the science at this point is pretty definitive in terms of its ability to support in that area.
Interesting. Yeah, that's one of the things that I get a lot of questions about from athletes is how they can enhance sleep or sleep better. And I didn't realize that it was actually approved to go to your doctor if you're having difficulty sleeping and get a prescription for it.
Right. Well, quality sleep is obviously critical when you're trying to push your body at a high level in athletics. Be able to have the regeneration time. And so that's something that cannabis can definitely do. And for athletes that potentially want to have that benefit but are then interested in not having the psychoactive effects, something like the cannabidiol oil, like the Real Scientific Hemp oil that Sadie is on, is something that would be beneficial for a lot of people because the CBD will have pretty much all the same effects as far as supporting deep sleep, but we'll do it without any of the psychoactive effects.
And do you actually get that from like a specific website or do you have to have it prescribed or how does that work?
No, that particular one, because it has sort of a different legal classification than everything else, you can just go online and purchase it. If you go to our website, scienceofweed.com, we have some information on there and some links out. Or the company that actually produces that is a company called Hemp Meds.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha. Okay. I'll link to that in the show notes.
Benefits as well that would be likely very interesting to athletes, which is the powerful anti-inflammatory effect.
Really?
Both CBD and THC have been shown to be some of the most powerful anti-inflammatories in existence. And so when you're pushing your body at a high level, that becomes very important in terms of being able to increase recovery time as well as decrease pain, right? Because that allows you to train more often and train at a higher level.
Interesting. So how would you use it? Like, have you seen studies where they've used it like post workout or what would you say is the best way to use something like that?
On that, I haven't personally seen any studies that have been done as it relates to the competitive athletics specifically. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, especially here in the US, research is dramatically held back by its legal status. So there are some more compelling studies that have come out of certain areas in like Europe and Israel, but that's one area I haven't seen specifically, but I have seen anecdotally. I have a number of friends who are competitive athletes, both in Olympics and X Games, and as well as just for more personal competitive purposes. And I've seen a number of people utilize it, and pretty much everyone has had the same response, which is if they take some of the CBD oil in the evening before they go to bed, they wake up feeling more rested and the soreness and pain that they would have anticipated from their workout the day prior is either not there or dramatically decreased. And so then they go and they work out the next day. They're able to push even harder.
And that's the stuff that you can just like get online.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay, cool. And I would imagine that, yeah, you'd probably want to wait until the evening to take it, just if you do get that sleepiness effect, huh?
Yeah, I mean, many people will take it both, you know, during the day and in the evening. That will typically have an effect of anywhere from about 8 to 12 hours. So some people will take it twice a day. And people are affected a little bit differently. There's no psychoactive effect to CBD, but it can produce sort of a sleepiness in some people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, okay. Oftentimes doing that just in the evenings is something that works out really well for many people.
Now, what are some of the other things from the Science of Weed documentary that you found to be very useful applications for marijuana or ways that we could be using it that we're not right now because it's not legal?
Absolutely. Well, there's so many. You know, it's one of the things that's just kind of floored me as I've gotten deeper and deeper into this field is that the amount of conditions that appear to be benefited by the use of cannabis is sort of overwhelming. And there are some that are, you know, more notable than others, both because of their effectiveness as well as the number of people that are affected by those conditions. So, you know, epilepsy, like we talked about with Sadie, is one of the areas that is just outstanding. Marijuana seems to be more effective in suppressing seizures than any pharmaceutical drug that is out there today, and does so without any of the negative side effects that the pharmaceuticals have in terms of liver function. Additionally, it serves as a neuroprotectant. So where there's sometimes neurological damage that's happened from seizures before people get on it, it actually helps to, in many cases, reverse some of the neurological damage. So for epilepsy, it's extraordinary. Cancer is another one that the research is just sort of overwhelming at this point. Initially, people were looking at the use of marijuana in terms of just treating the side effects of cancer treatments, right? So being able to manage the nausea, the pain, things like that from chemo and from radiation. And for that, it's absolutely beneficial. And you know, you can look at it then just more of a quality of life,
right?
Support. But more and more, as continued studies have happened, what we're finding is that cannabis will, in and of itself, actually slow the growth of cancer cells and, in many cases, reverse them. There was a study done by Dr. Tashkin out of UCLA. And this was a federally funded study that initially was intended to find that people who smoked cannabis on a regular basis would have increased risk of lung cancer. And so they ran the study, and what they found was actually the exact opposite. They found that not only was there not an increased risk, but that many of the patients that they were following were showing a slower progression than the control group was. And we've seen this over and over again. And so, you know, what it happens is that both THC and CBD increase what's known as apoptosis, which is scheduled cell die-off.
Right.
So, you know, cells are they're formed, they split, and then they're intended to die off before they have an opportunity to mutate into cancer cells. In an unhealthy system, that function doesn't always happen the way that it's supposed to. Mm. And so THC and CBD increase that so as to make it to where cells are dying off before they're mutating, and it's also supporting the cells that are already mutated to die off, causing shrinkage in tumors. And there's, at this point, literally tens of thousands of anecdotal studies showing that cannabis could in fact be able to reverse cancer, And there are several clinical trials that are indicating that as well, though not 100% conclusive at this point, just because the research is still held back.
Yeah, we've got a guy who I've had on this podcast before, Dr. Mark Circus, who I know he operates out of Brazil, but I know that he utilizes cannabinoids and marijuana for treatment of some of his cancer patients, just because of the research that's been done on scheduled cell death and apoptosis and tumor cells. So I think it's super interesting. If I ever got cancer or somebody close to me did, like, there are specific things that I would certainly look into, like, you know, ketosis, low carb diet, some of the stuff from the Gerson therapy. And I would definitely investigate marijuana too, if it were me, just based off of the research that I've seen on it. And of course, in your documentary, you get into a ton of other medical conditions, and I'll link to it in the show notes for people over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/weed, or you can go to scienceofweed.com. But the other thing I'm curious about, is, you know, I've had people like Dave Asprey on the podcast before, and we've talked about mold and fungi and mycotoxins and those type of things, specifically in plant-based compounds, beans, seeds, cheeses, things like that. Do you have to be careful with things like that in marijuana? Like, how do you know that your source is actually pure or good? Are there specific things that you can do to check on that?
Yeah. Absolutely. So, I mean, with any plant, there's the potential that you're going to have molds, funguses, things like that are going to become present. And so there's a number of different factors for how to handle safety regarding that with cannabis. One is that there is laboratory testing available, and more that's becoming sort of an industry standard within dispensaries, is to test the cannabis that they're bringing in before they sell it to patients. And they're testing both for potency as well as making sure that there's not the presence of molds, mildews, pesticides, things like that. And so they're the safety mechanisms in that way. Additionally, though, because of the ways in which cannabis is taken, even if that was to be present, it's typically not a safety factor because, you know, for instance, if you're smoking it, and there did happen to be trace amounts of mold or mildew, the heat will kill that off.
Right.
And so it ends up generally not being an issue. And then similarly, if you're doing it as a concentrate or in an edible form, typically there's, in the extraction process, there's either some type of a solvent used, like alcohol, that will kill off molds and mildews, or there's heat that's applied that, again, will kill it off. So even if there was something that was present and it wasn't tested for, generally speaking, by the time that it gets to the patient, that's already been mitigated just in the ways in which it's taken. But I do think that safety testing is something that should be done as well, because you are oftentimes talking about people that have, you know, compromised immune systems and a number of different challenges. And so safety into account is key. But in the scheme of things, it seems to be less relevant with cannabis than it would be with a lot of other herbals, where, you know, you might just, with a lot of other herbs, you might just, you know, dry it, grind it up, and put it in a capsule.
Right.
There's nothing in that process that would kill off a mold or mildew. Mm-hmm. Whereas with heat or alcohol or something like that, that'll usually handle it.
Yep. Now, how much addictive potential is there here?
So this is an awesome topic, and it's been a controversial one for a long time. But at this point, there's not much reason for it to be controversial. The studies are just absolutely clear. Cannabis doesn't have any physiological addictive potential. So no matter how heavy someone's use is, if they stop it, they won't have the withdrawal syndromes that someone would if they were coming off of heroin or Percocet or any number of other things. So its ability to be physiologically addictive has been pretty much completely disproven at this point. It can, however, like pretty much anything, be psychologically addictive. You know, the same way that someone could become addicted to watching TV or addicted to some other substance, the way in which people feel when being on it can become something that they have a reliance on. Mm-hmm. And so there can be challenges in terms of coming off just from a psychological standpoint. But that is oftentimes much easier to address and work with than physiological dependency.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And there's no long-term effects from that.
Okay. Is it the same with this oil? Like, or is any potential for like a psychological addiction to the oil mitigated by the fact that it doesn't result in the same kind of high as like smoking weed or an edible?
You know, to the best of my knowledge, there haven't been any studies done on CBD only in terms of its potential for psychological dependency, but just kind of from a logical standpoint, that really wouldn't be present. Because you're not getting a high, or you know, that sense of euphoria that someone might get from
right
taking THC, that's just not going to be present. So there could be still the sense, like if CBD is helping them with something, like let's say someone has chronic pain and they're taking it and it's making their pain go away, they may not want to stop taking it because it means that their pain is going to be present again. But that's different than saying that they're addicted to it.
Okay.
That just means that they don't want to give up the benefit that is there.
Gotcha.
But there really shouldn't be a psychological dependency because it's not creating a psychoactive effect.
Have you seen the changes in states like Washington, where I live, and Colorado has made any type of difference in, you know, I don't know when you started making this documentary, The Science of Weed, but or if weed became legal on a state level since you started making it, and if that's caused changes in terms of availability or in terms of perception or in terms of creating more issues. But has that changed things much, in your opinion, like with you being immersed in this from a medical standpoint?
Yeah, it's absolutely made changes. And for the most part, they've been pretty profoundly wonderful in terms of what has shifted regarding public perception as well as regarding policy. So a lot of people who were more on the prohibitionary side were just terrified that when legalization came into effect, it would mean like the end of society as we know it, right? Everyone would start having huge breakdowns and crime would flourish in the streets. And as we've seen legalization come into effect in Washington and, you know, particularly Colorado, where it's a sort of a more significant rollout, that's all being shown to be not true.
Mm.
And there was already other indicators of that. You know, Portugal had decriminalized all drugs about 12 years ago now. But we really hadn't looked at nearly as extensively at it until it shifted here in the U.S. And you know, what's been really clear from that is that not only has crime not gone up, but crime like throughout Colorado has actually gone down significantly. And it's not clear whether that's the result of legalization or not, but it is clear that legalization did not cause an increase in crime. And then, you know, additionally to that, you see the benefit in terms of additional tax revenue, particularly as it relates to improving education. You know, the way that Colorado's laws are drafted, the majority of the tax revenue goes into the school systems, which causes tremendous long-term benefits. So most of what it was that people were worried about that could go wrong has at this point been pretty clearly shown to have not gone wrong.
Yeah.
And actually in many ways gone the other direction. And you know, anytime that you move away from prohibition and just telling people they can't do something and instead make it available but regulate it to handle safety factors, you generally start to see that the issues that we thought would be there aren't there, and in fact it ends up being a huge benefit.
Yeah, gotcha. Now, you know, in terms of Science of Weed, what was the most interesting thing you think? I mean, we talked about the story of Sadie, which is obviously a fascinating and heartwarming story, and it is a really powerful video. I'll put a link to that part of the video in the show notes for people. But is there any other story that you think was really, really interesting that you came across while creating this documentary?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've come across so many stories at this point.
Like, if you had to pick one that you think was just, like, super intriguing.
Well, you know, there's one that stands out for me personally, and I think that it might be really interesting to a number of your listeners as well. There's a man that we've been following and working with through the film who was a two-time gold medal Olympic basketball coach from Australia. And just last year, he was actually inducted into the Australian Basketball Hall of Fame. And he's had diabetes for much of his life, and then over the last few years been struggling with cancer. And, you know, pretty incredible story, and that when he was still an active basketball coach, he had let the league know that he was using marijuana to control his blood sugar for diabetes. And so they kicked him out, actually. And he had, and then at that point, his team started to lose and go downhill, where they were on a major winning streak. And so after a few losses, the league decided to sort of make an exception for him and bring him back on as the coach. At that point, you know, when he came back, they ended up having a huge winning streak and actually won the entire year. And, you know, so we've got this this footage of his teammates going crazy and just being, you know, so excited to go from this huge losing streak to then winning the entire year.
Wow.
And, you know, now, so he's been using cannabis for quite a long time to control his blood sugar, but then as he...
Like smoking or...?
Uh-huh. Smoking as well as edibles. And then more recently, since he's been dealing with bone cancer, in addition to what he was previously doing, we also added the Real Scientific Hemp Oil, that CBD-rich oil, to his protocol. And... I just spoke with him about a week or so ago, and he had just gotten his lab results back, and they were the best that he's had in years.
Mm.
And so we're starting to see the turnaround that's happening with his cancer. And then in addition to that, just that he's able to move around and function in a way that he hasn't been able to for quite a while, because, you know, the pain had been so great. And the challenges with his immune system and all of that starting to reverse now, where he's so much more lively, he's more engaged again, and the indicators are that his cancer growth is actually reversing now.
Yeah, yeah, cool, nice. This is really fascinating stuff, and, you know, I think that a lot of people, including myself, were under the impression that, you know, maybe the use of weed was only something that you could do while at the same time getting high, which I know is nice for a lot of, like, that's why some people use weed recreationally. But there are uses that go way above and beyond that in terms of its medicinal use and the use of some of these oils and some of the things that you've talked about today. So when does the actual documentary come out, or is it out already?
This one isn't out yet. Myself and my director did produce another film about 3 years ago called Medicinal Cannabis and Its Impact on Human Health. And that one is out and it's available online for free. People can go to marijuanamovie.org and see that one. And it's, you know, it's similar in nature. It touches on the research from a very credible standpoint. And it's a great resource for people to look at. But, you know, over the course of the last 3 years, the amount of information that's come out is in just so much more. So now we're doing this much larger scale film. That first one was all filmed within California. And right now for The Science of Weed, we've been filming all over the world. Actually, my film crew just landed in Italy yesterday, and they're filming now throughout Europe for the next couple of weeks and then flying over to Israel. Mm. So for this film, we're still in production currently. We're going to be filming for about another month, and then we'll go into editing. And we're kind of working with the distribution companies to decide on an official release date, but it looks like sometime right around the beginning of 2015 is when Science of Weed is going to be coming out.
Okay, cool. And I see on your website you've got a place where people can put in their email addresses to get a notice when it's released and all that good stuff. So
exactly. And between now and then, we're going to be releasing a number of shorter videos. Mm-hmm. Right? So the feature film will be coming out in early 2015. But in addition to the feature film, we're also doing a whole series of disease-specific videos that are going to go more in-depth about each of these different diseases, both showing the the research as well as the individual stories of it.
Yeah.
And so we're going to be releasing a number of those between now and then. And so go to the website and they get signed up. They'll be able to have access to all of those along the way.
Nice. Cool. All right. Well, I'm gonna put a link to that and also a link to this video of this this story of the baby Sadie over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/weed. So if folks are listening in, you can go check that out. Well, folks, I know this is kind of a controversial subject. If you have your own thoughts, your own comments, questions, leave them over in the comments section for this episode at bengreenfieldfitness.com/weed. And be sure to check out this documentary when it comes out. And thanks for listening. And James, thanks for coming on the call today.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right, folks. This is Ben Greenfield signing out from bengreenfieldfitness.com.
Visit bengreenfieldfitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.